to That's What She Said, the fortnightly feminist podcast where we discuss current news, a badass woman from history, and soon-to-be listener stories, helping us all be our best intersectional feminist selves. With me, Nina Attridge.
And me, Hannah Thacker. And I'd just like to say thank you to Matilda Eyre for our gorgeous intro song. Be sure to check her out on Spotify, absolutely. We've been listening to it probably too many times to...
I've been singing it more than I've been listening to it, which is probably not great.
I don't think I would even try to meet her standards.
Not tried?
And also, thank you to Camisa Stand for her artwork. You can find her on Instagram as Bravo Camo, one word.
They've made us look and sound way cooler than we actually are.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to complain about. Maybe.
Just so you know, guys, like that's the bar being set high on the outside, but then you get to the core. We're not all cracked up to be, but
yeah, I'm sure we can deliver.
That's not very feminist, is it? I'm already starting off.
Oh my god,
low.
It's like no worries, but
no worries, but guys,
this is
the patriarchy
shit.
Is already beating me down.
Honey,
it hasn't. I'm joking.
Fine. We've got this.
Right, so as Nina said, we talk about current news stories because, as I'm sure you noticed, the Twitter sphere and TV and radio, it's a complicated old world, and we want to cherry pick those stories about women, human rights, interesting things going on around the world.
I think the things that matter to us are probably the things that matter to a lot of people. I don't know, you're just so bombarded with Brexit, it's hard to imagine anything else
Brexit,
is happening.
Brexit and Trump.
It's like there's nothing else happening in the world, but there is. So we're probably going to try and talk less about that and more about other things going on, some good, some bad. But basically picking out the things that we should all know about, but maybe don't.
For sure.
Yeah. That kind of brings us to the badass woman in history thing as well. Because you hear about the same feminist women all the time. I don't know, I do, I think. So we're going to try and find the people that are perhaps a little bit less talked about, that have interesting stories that you should know.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many stories out there, and it's often said that you have to see it in order to believe you can be it, as cringy and catchy as that is. But, you know, for a lot of us, we grow up believing that we can't achieve things, we can't even attempt things, because people haven't gone before us, but they have.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that history barely recognises them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so each fortnight we're going to be taking turns to tell each other a story and yourselves.
If you happen to be listening.
If you happen to be listening, you know, we hope somebody... Hi.
Are you there?
Yeah. We're going to be taking in turns to tell each other the story, the life, history of a badass woman. And the twist is that the other person who isn't telling the story has no idea who the story is going to be about.
And this is going to be good, because if you know me and Hannah, you know that we kind of have, not different interests, but Hannah's so musical. As much as I pretend to be into cool music, I'm not there yet. As much as Hannah's trying to help.
I'm pretending too.
We all are. But we're probably going to bring very different takes to it. We don't discuss who we're going to be telling each other about. And I kind of don't think we'll overlap. I think it'll be rare for us to overlap. I think we have quite different taste in things.
There's a lot of women to choose from.
Yeah, we can do it.
All right, so... back to the first part of this podcast, which is current news.
Yes.
What have you found in this past couple of weeks that has caught your eye?
So, obviously, at the moment, always hard to avoid Trump, gonna avoid Trump. But what has been happening this side of the pond, the proverbial pond, is... the Gender Recognition Act.
I can't get over the fact that she just said the proverbial pond.
never say that again.
There is no keeping a straight face.
Oh, you should have seen her eyes like dilate as I said that. I've never said that phrase before. Okay. Yeah, so the Gender Recognition Act, the amendment to it, there was a petition that I'm sure you know about, that so many people have got behind. I had statistics and I've lost them.
But good stuff.
Yeah, I know. I'm really good at the whole fact-checking thing. But, so they had to, like, extend the deadline for getting behind this petition to the Monday, because the website kept crashing because so many people were behind it. And we just need to wait and see now what's going to happen.
So for our listeners that don't know anything about it,
yeah,
can you describe what the policy is?
Initially, the Gender Recognition Act requires you to have a panel of, in inverted commas, experts to determine that you are not the gender you were born as.
Mm-hmm.
It's not up to you to decide. You need to be diagnosed medically with gender dysphoria. It's been deemed a really invasive and sort of dehumanizing process to go through. And basically the law change would be for people to be able to identify for themselves without it being a medical diagnosis, without essentially saying there's something wrong with you, to be able to live as the gender you want to live as. And this is an amendment to the 2004 Gender Recognition Act, which would mean that you can self-identify. It's been enormously popular. There's been so many people behind it that you would hope that this is going to become policy, but the only guarantee with these petitions is that it gets discussed in Parliament. It doesn't mean anything's necessarily going to happen.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Obviously, something being this at the fore of British news, you'd hope that that would mean that people are going to, well, that the government's going to do something about it. But it's no guarantee, so just got to hope, really. I mean, we're doing the right things. This petition is the best way to start.
I know, and I think, like you say, with it being such a prominent feature of news, it's really popular with the general public, you know, especially the more, you know, liberal, open-minded general public. And it makes me think, recently we had the People's Vote March, and more people attended that than attended the protest against the Iraq War.
Yeah, my mum attended.
Did she now?
Yeah.
Mrs. Attridge.
Mrs. Attridge, accidentally.
Accidentally.
She was going to meet a friend for lunch, and they just decided to go.
That is a good lunch break.
Yeah, it was a friend from uni that she'd not seen in like 30 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she got off the tube to meet her, and she was like, should we go on the march? So they went and did a little bit of protesting, and then went for lunch.
It puts me to shame.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's more than I did.
But yeah, it makes me think of that march, and sadly, nothing happened in response to the Iraq war protest. And now, potentially, we have another outcry from the people that is going to be ignored by the government.
It's a bit of a worrying trend.
Mm-hmm. I know. And meanwhile, we're a nation obsessed with royal baby announcements.
Oh my god. I can't. I just feel so sorry for Meghan Markle that they got married, what, like 6 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
She's already popping out babies, and this is going to be her life now?
You see, it does seem to be a trend, but do you know what? It just, for me, it's like this fascination with an idolization of the royal family. It's like, you, especially the women, they are made important by getting married, having babies.
Yeah.
What are they wearing? They're more likely to be in the fashion pages than a newspaper talking about the activist work.
Mm.
Talking about the fact that Meghan Markle had a whole life and career beforehand, but they only talk about that as like the bad side of her life.
Yeah, it's like something to be ashamed of.
And
that
now
she did a sex scene in suits
But now it's fine because she's obviously...
Yeah, she's reformed now because she's married into the royals. I think it was so exciting that the royal family was finally getting someone in it that wasn't the usual typecast.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes no difference if they're going to make her fit in the mold. Like, it doesn't matter who she was if she's still going to be the same, like, perfect wife to the royal that opens her own car door. Let us not forget.
No, it was closed. She closed her own car door.
Wait, so someone else opened it?
Yeah.
I think she only did half the job.
The driver got out and opened it, and then she got out and closed it behind her, like any
that
normal
just
human
default.
Being.
Like, that's muscle memory. Mm. Oh my god, she didn't even open it herself. I was giving her too much credit. That's ridiculous.
She broke her
ticket. I can't deal with it.
I know.
It honestly breaks my heart that that's the life she's going to be living now.
I mean, we really won't know what life she's living because obviously that was a Freudian slip and a half.
Bloody hell.
The monarchy.
Give us a chance to get into it. Warm me up first, please.
The monarchy is shrouded in secrecy.
Did you just confuse the patriarchy with the monarchy?
I mean, it's the same thing,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Go on.
I know we have a queen, guys. Don't shout at me. The monarchy is shrouded in secrecy, but the things that they celebrate, marriage, children, everyone going by the stereotypical gender roles.
Yeah.
And now this is being flooded through our media, and it's like, look at the wealth and success you can have if you follow this pattern.
I'm just I'm pretty fiercely anti-royal as a rule. I just find it so depressing when people, like, tout the argument of, oh, but the tourism and the tradition. When people argue for tradition as a reason to do things, it's just such an easy one to shoot down, but at the same time it's the kind of argument that people won't hear. So it's like, it was tradition for so many atrocities to happen, and we accept that that's wrong now, but for some reason we still think that tradition is something to be celebrated. I just can't get my head around it.
I don't think I necessarily have a problem with tradition. I think that can be a really wonderful positive thing if used in the right way, but it is a weak argument.
Yeah,
I will agree with that. Saying,
it's not a justification.
Yeah.
I think it can be traditions can be nice, they can be sort of unifying and good for communities, but using them as justifications for things is proper messed up. Especially when it comes to the royals, I just can't get behind it.
Should we leave the royals for a bit?
I wouldn't mind leaving them forever. Down with the monopatriarchy.
Oh, new t-shirt.
Done with the monopatriarchy. That's like the worst slogan ever.
Have you got anything else on your radar?
Yeah, so following on from the trans and the gender recognition act we were talking about before,
sure.
I didn't realise, I don't know if you did, why are you looking at me like that?
I'm listening.
She's grinning at me like I'm about to deliver a punchline.
I'm just happy.
And there's nothing funny that I'm going to say, so I'm sorry. I'm going to let you down.
There's no punchline. I'll be more serious.
Okay. I didn't realise how many countries already... Shut up.
I just need to get it out. Okay.
I just closed my eyes while I say it.
Okay.
I didn't realise how many countries already have a gender-neutral option on their passports. I didn't know anyone did, to be quite honest. I think it's quite exciting.
Wow.
So, and they're not going to be countries you expect either. We already have, into some degree, obviously these are all different in legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Legislature.
That's the one.
Yeah. Taiwan, Canada, Australia, Austria, Denmark, Germany, Malta, New Zealand, Pakistan, India, Ireland, and Nepal.
Wow.
And then there's actually states of the US that allow you to have a third gender or a gender X or a blank gender on official documentation. I don't think I understand the law of it enough to know why gender is needed on certain documents. Like, for example, a driving license. I won't get into passports because that's a whole immigration and migration issue that I probably don't know enough about to definitively say why you need a gender for it, but a driving license. Why do you need a gender on a driving license? How it makes no difference to how you drive a car, what, I don't know, what would happen if something went wrong when you're driving a car, if you're in an accident. How does it make a difference?
I honestly...
Answer me, Hannah.
I have no answer for you. I have no answer for you. I imagine there's some grumpy old man at the top like, oh, but women drivers.
If that's the reason, if women drivers is the reason that we have genders on our driving license.
Also, why women drivers? Why do they always say it like that?
Women drivers.
Women drivers.
I don't know. It's like when my grand... Oh, I shouldn't talk about my granddad. It's like when my granddad says...
Too late!
It's like where anyone in a professional job to my granddad is a lady version of the job. Aww. So it's like, oh, the lady teacher. Or my lady doctor. Granddad, you can say you're doctor.
different times, you know.
I've already promised my auntie that we'll record an episode of the podcast with no swearing, nothing controversial, nothing about gender, nothing about feminism. I don't know what we talk about. But
made a promise.
To my auntie that we'd do a fake episode of the podcast that my granddad could listen to.
Right. I mean, he might just have to listen to the regular podcast and just get with it.
I don't think he will, it's fine.
It might change him.
I don't think he knows what podcast is.
Well, it'll be fine then.
Okay.
I was not agreed to this.
Yeah, I didn't ask for your consent there, so.
No, it's not admissible.
Oh my god.
So, I don't think it'll be Halloween just yet. By the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah.
And we're very excited.
I'm so excited.
We're already planned. We've got plans for trick-or-treating. Mm. We're going to have some candy.
Candy?
Candy.
Excuse me. Where are you from?
I don't know. Some wine. Watch Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
Which is the best.
Yeah.
The best. And in the spirit of Halloween, I found this wonderful bit of news on The Independent.
Yes, yes, yes. I loved good news.
That witches in Brooklyn held a ritual in protest against Kavanaugh. They put a hex on him.
Oh my god.
As well as, and I have a quote.
Wait, do we have any specific witches here? Or just tell me.
Just like a coven of witches in Brooklyn.
Okay, of course.
Yeah. Obviously. Okay, so they cast a hex on Kavanaugh and I quote, all rapists and the patriarchy, which emboldens, rewards, and protects them.
I wonder what kind of spell it was.
I don't know, but I really hope magic is real.
I hope it was that one. You know the one in Harry Potter when Ron eats the slugs, and then but they do the spell really badly, so he just starts throwing up slugs instead.
That wouldn't be a bad thing. I definitely don't think he could be on the Supreme Court.
Pseudocreme Court.
The Supreme Court, if you're throwing up slugs. That's a good
one. I think that's a good one. I really like that kind of passive, aggressive, disgusting. Or the one where, oh, I'm just getting Harry Potter now, where Mad-Eye Moody turns Malfoy into a weasel or a ferret or something.
Yeah, but all ferrets.
Not all
just,
ferrets?
There will be so many ferrets. If all the rapists
and
patriarchy,
that would be a whole different
got turned
issue.
Into ferrets, would be overrun. The ferrets would win, guys.
Oh no, I don't want a like world where it's ferrets that. Imagine if ferrets were dominating all the like economic systems and that. It's like at least if the humans are defeating us now, but if it was ferrets.
Hey, equality for the animals too, guys.
I don't want animals to have the same like.
What are you saying?
Ferret to have the same economic power as a man while I still have less economic power than both of them.
Alright, fair enough. We don't want either of those to be in charge.
I never imagined a world of ferrets that would be the Supreme Court.
It's, why does that happen?
I don't know. Supreme Court judge.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the wine.
So, for Halloween, what are you going to go as?
We have to decide because we're doing a couple's costume. So we need to think of something between us.
I don't know. I was recently reading up about the Charles Adams artist who made the Adams Family. I'm still pretty keen on that.
Yeah, I know.
I think I would rock a little silky mustache.
A silky mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Who am I going as then?
Morticia.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. We'll have to think. And also, we're going trick or treating with a 5-year-old, so we probably can't be too scary.
That's. Yeah.
I'd rather not. 5-year-old nightmares with my outfit, because I mean my default would be a slutty cat, but I don't think that's appropriate either.
That might be slightly confusing for the children.
Wait, what holiday is this? What do you do for a living, Nina?
Have they not seen Mean Girls?
Yeah, I doubt it. I hope not.
I hope not too. Although there will be time for that, I'm sure. Have you got any more news stories to
I'll just quickly update anyone that's interested. Have you heard about the upskirting bill?
No, but I'm very aware of upskirting.
Yeah. Oh god. Oh no, I feel like this. Oh.
That came out.
Yeah.
More potently than I. That was. I intend. I feel like
we need
it.
To stop recording and then Hannah have a chat. I'm a bit worried.
I am aware that it's a thing. So, if anyone out there does not know what upskirting is. It's basically where a person uses a mobile phone to take a picture underneath unaware people's skirts.
It was kind of big in school. Did you have that?
No.
I remember. I don't know if I don't know if it was just rumours, but you definitely heard about it in school. And that's pretty fucked up. Anyway, so. There's a woman called Gina Martin who was at a festival, I think it was only like last year, maybe summer of 2016 or summer of 2017, and she noticed that there was some guys behind her that kept pushing into her, and then she kind of glanced down at their phone and saw that there was a picture that had been taken up her skirt. So she said something to them. And they just didn't say anything. So she went to the police and they said, I think they essentially did nothing. I can't remember.
Is that because it's not actually, it's not listed as a sexual offence?
No, there was no law, and there is no law, in fact, that says upskirting is illegal. So this woman, Gina Martin, like really, really good on Twitter, really good human, worth researching. She has been campaigning ever since to try and make a specific law, or at least it's part of another law, voyeurism.
Yes, yeah.
That would make upskirting illegal. And she's managed to get it debated in the House of Commons or Lords. It's been raised in Parliament, and basically the latest news is that it's going to get a second reading in the House of Lords this week, which will probably be last week. By the time we go out, meaning that it should be a criminal offence, even though it's common sense, that upskirting would be illegal by early next year. It's kind of one of these ones that it's like, yay. Glad that thing that shouldn't be
that's
a thing
actually,
is...
That is actually so brilliant.
What's brilliant about that is that this woman on her own just decided that was shit and she was going to do something about it, and I think that's amazing, and you should all research her,
and oftentimes that's all it takes.
Exactly, because it's so obvious that should be illegal, but you kind of just assume it would be, or it doesn't, it just takes it happening to you to realize that it's not a thing. When you actually go to the police and they're like, oh, there's nothing we can do, you realize that the law's shit and you need to change it. And she's done that. I think that's really cool. It's really impressive.
Really good. I think as well, if it had, you know, sorry guys, specifically men, if it was the other way around, it would have already have been illegal.
Yeah, no, so would. It's the same as
but obviously, you know, thanks to fashion, it means that we're more easily taken advantage of.
Exactly.
Well,
I hate it when people take pictures of people in public anyway, like in any way. I think it's so rude. You know, when people like take the piss out of people on the bus or whatever, or like people in the gym, that one makes me want to cry. It's so mean. Just taking a picture of someone without their consent is fucked up.
People taking pictures of themselves in the gym.
Oh yeah,
upsets
that's
me
a
enough.
Whole other issue.
So my final piece of news is that the Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon was invited to a BBC conference called News Exchange 2018. And when she found out that Steve Bannon, who was a strategist in the White House for Donald Trump.
Yeah. I think there's a documentary about him on Netflix.
Is he the one who, like, did he recently write a book?
Oh, I don't know.
Outing, like, the sort of inner workings of the White House with Trump in it.
I'm not sure. I'm, like, woefully out of touch with American politics. Mm.
I'm sure there's probably several books in the works for that. But yeah, so she found out he'd been invited not only to the conference, but to speak at the conference. Yeah. And she has pulled out of that conference to take a stand against far-right racist views.
Yeah.
I just think Nicola Sturgeon, I'm such a fan.
I really like her.
She's such a strong, powerful person who has things that she believes in and will always stand by them.
Yeah.
And then you compare that to our Prime Minister and it's like, what the hell do you even believe in?
I know, it breaks my heart. I really like Nicola Sturgeon. I think she's doing really good things.
She's pragmatic and liberal.
Yeah. I think what I like about that as well is she's doing what we should all be doing in the media and like in social media and just not saying that it's okay to give people with far-right views a voice if their voice is fascist or racist. Like, I don't think we have to give people a voice if it's hate crime, if what you're going to be sharing is racism. You don't need a platform. We don't owe you a platform. I think it's good that she's taking a stand.
I understand potentially why the BBC may have invited him, because for them they're supposed to be neutral. They're thinking, how can we give this conference balance? However, far-right views.
I don't think they need balance.
It's in the same way that, like, super far-left views may not be acceptable.
Yeah.
Because then you get into the realms of communism, and we've seen how that isn't the best way for society to be.
It's always in the hands of whoever's in power, and whoever's in power is going to be sort of by nature of being able to get into power, they're going to be a problematic figure, generally speaking, unless you're super self-aware. And we only have that in the past few years with people like Nicola Sturgeon getting any kind of power and being aware of the responsibility that comes with that. Other than that, coming to power normally means that you've got some inherent privilege.
True.
That makes it quite difficult, really, to be an unbiased leader, and that's when it's dangerous for you to be in power.
I don't think there's ever going to be a thing as an unbiased
leader. Not necessarily unbiased, but people need to be aware of the bias that they carry naturally and the prejudices they carry anyway.
Yeah, I think people usually cannot help the privilege they have. If you're born into a rich family, you were just born into a rich family.
Yeah.
If you were born into a white middle class family who were able to pay for your education, who were able to support you through university, help with your deposit to your first flat, whatever. Or they know someone at a company and they're able to get you a really good internship, possibly a good job. That, in essence, could be okay.
There's nothing naturally wrong with that. No. It's not your fault.
No, we're all opportunists at heart as human nature.
Mm.
And it's bringing that awareness to your own privilege is how you start to think about other people outside yourself.
Exactly.
And that's what Nicola Sturgeon does.
Mm. I agree. My new sort of mantra, I would say. First time I've used that word, really. But I've become obsessed with the idea that, because I get obsessed with sort of the idea of a perfectly unproblematic person and sort of doing everything right and not offending people but still standing up for things, and obviously it's all impossible. You can't be that person. So my new goal, maybe not mantra, maybe goal, is you might be problematic but you don't have to be a problem. We all carry things that make us prejudiced in different ways, and people have privileges in different ways, but it doesn't mean that you have to let them become a problem for other people. That's kind of how I'm going to live my life now.
It's a good way. It's a good mantra.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt.
Mantra, goal, whatever you want to say.
I have a happy, well, not happy.
All right, bringing it down. A happy but not happy, guys.
I have a thing that I read today that just made me laugh so much.
Okay.
It's such a, like, kind of speak to the manager haircut type person. I just died. So apparently, I didn't realise that this is a thing that people don't like. But apparently, people don't like you doing your makeup on public transport.
Oh my god, have you never noticed this?
I do it all the time. I've always done it. It saves time.
I don't think it really happens that much up north. But if you...
I've never done it in the south, actually. Maybe that's what
it is. Whenever you go to the south, it's on the tube. For some reason on the tube, unless you are stood still, either reading or staring into a blank space... then you are a strange human being.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this one time, right? Speaking of having internships, I had an internship in London,
mm-hmm.
and I was going to a gig after work.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I haven't eaten. I'll just grab a wrap. I'll eat it on the tube. Because I had literally that
big
time
mistake.
Of travelling. The dirty looks I got for eating my completely unoffensive wrap.
Is it like egg and tuna or something?
No, it was like falafel and hummus.
That's pretty like odourless as well.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to be thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I was like, you know, do my makeup, it's just like, ugh.
Why? Right. So this article I read.
Okay.
This is clearly quality journalism. But the article I read had doing makeup in the same category as clipping your toenails, like shaving. I'm sure that was on there. I'm sorry, but these are not in the same categories as doing your makeup.
No.
When you're doing your makeup, you're not removing something from your body and leaving it on public transport. It's the same. It's like fucking drawing a picture. It's just that the picture is your face. I just cannot get to grips with the idea that people find it weird. But, oh, I just live for this article. It's so funny. So these people, like, it's got quotes from people complaining about people that have, like, done their makeup on public transport.
All right. And they can slip a sip of wine for this one.
So, Michael Boyd, 61, said he had been dusted with face powder by nearby make-uppers. Wait, and the quote, who is this man? I'm sorry. He said, I've also been sprayed in the face as a lady squirted perfume onto her neck, he said. I coughed very loudly, .. and she scowled at me.
Why is he so close to her neck?
I know, and why? What life is this man living that he needs to write into, like, I don't know, probably got it from The Guardian or something. He wrote into The Guardian about someone spraying perfume on him. What life are you living where that's your main complaint?
Are there any more quotes,
please? I want his life. There's a woman, who are these people? One anonymous woman, she's clearly got controversial opinions, who works for a train operator, said she had seen full makeovers on her journeys around the West Midlands. She watched a woman spend 30 minutes applying makeup. I kind of feel like this is, like, shaming a bit. I actually think this is a bit of sexism at work, but let's just laugh at it, because what else can we do? So she said... She proceeded to do a full-on application of foundation, blending away merrily, followed by contouring, lip liner, lip colour, eyeshadow, eyeliner, eyelashes, then a final flourish of powder all over the face to set it in place, I assume. Some of the other passengers were looking quite bemused. I don't think they were. I think it was just you, anonymous woman.
Sorry, but right, when you're on a really boring train journey and there is someone who gets on bare face, like they probably got up late, they probably don't look their best. And they do a full makeover.
It's entertaining.
I'm going to watch that.
I'm sorry, but there are YouTubers that get paid money for this. You're getting it for free. Like,
exactly.
Entertainment. I actually think this could literally be me. Because she said it has become the norm to bring bathroom habits to the train journey.
Bathroom.
No, it's not a bathroom habit. You can do makeup anywhere. Anywhere.
Anywhere.
You can do your makeup anywhere. But I, this year, got ready for my final year, like, summer ball on the train back to Durham from Manchester.
Mm.
So I did my makeup on the train. So I was doing some, like, intense makeup shit. It was some detailed application happening. And I had headphones in and I was really... It was coming back from Parklife, actually.
Okay.
Or from Parklife training or something. So I was really tired. And there was a woman sat opposite me and I was just being really grumpy. I had my headphones in. I was just doing the makeup. Like, oh, I've got to go to the ball. Oh, I've got to go drink alcohol. I'm grumpy. But I did my makeup and she was watching the whole time, like, really intently.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point she just kind of stopped me and, like, I had headphones in, so I had to take them out. And then I was really annoyed that I had to take my headphones out. But she went, I'm sorry, but it's just so impressive. You're really good at makeup. And I was like, oh, thank you.
That is wonderful. That's what people need to be writing in about.
Who was that offending? I wasn't taking up anyone else's space. I didn't get powder on anyone's coat. I didn't spray perfume on anyone. Like, ridiculous.
It is absolutely. And so we're told that, you know, not allowed to do your makeup on public transport. But we expect you, when you arrive at an event, a party, a meeting, to look great.
Yeah.
Because all the adverts say so.
I know.
All the films, all the media.
It's such a good time to do your makeup.
Yes.
Like, sometimes I can't be bothered reading a book. My brain isn't on yet. Or, like, I broke my headphones because that's what I've done and I'm really sad. Doing your makeup, like, it saves me, like, rather than just rushing and looking like a child's done it, I can do it on the train where I've got a free 20 minutes anyway. What a valid use of time.
Exactly. I don't know who it's offending. And I know there are going to be some...
Well, I'll tell you who it's offending. Oh, right, it's Michael Boyd, 61.
Oh, no.
Dusted with face powder by nearby make-uppers. I'm sorry, it should be maker
uppers. Oh, those pesky nearby make-uppers.
Surely maker-uppers.
Maker-uppers?
Yeah.
Make-uppers.
Why make-uppers?
Make-up.
Yeah.
Doers?
Make-upperers.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway.
Maybe Michael Boyd is being stupid.
Michael Boyd's a twat. You heard it here first.
And yet his views were aired on The Guardian.
I know! Why is that an article? I mean, I enjoyed it, but yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Quick update. I don't know if you watch... Have you seen Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
No.
It's my ultimate favourite programme.
Okay.
It's a musical, kind of.
Yeah, that's probably why I haven't seen
it. Yeah, I know, but trust. It's a lot about mental health, a lot about feminism. There's a song called The Sexy Getting Ready Song in the first series.
Okay.
That's just taking the piss out of how much effort women have to go to. And then they get a rapper in, and he's like, oh man, I didn't realise how much effort women go to. I gotta go apologise to some women. It's really funny. But I didn't notice, and it's been painful.
Also, just side note, I love your attempt at rap.
That's rapping. Have you heard of rapping?
That's
because
like
that is it.
That's like the proper like white 80s rapping.
Oh my God. That is the best
man.
I can do. Oh man.
Oh gosh.
Golly gosh. Have you heard of outrageous women? Anyway, it's been woefully under advertised, but then there's a new series on Netflix and not enough people watch this programme. It's just brilliant. It's so funny.
So we're doing a bit of gentle plug-in.
Is that a plug? Can you plug something?
I can't take myself seriously when I say any word like gentle plugging.
Gentle plugging. Oh, no.
Hi, Mum.
Getting delirious.
Make you proud.
We're doing a bit of gentle plugging.
What an evening.
Okay.
Beautiful. Classy women of the world. Speaking of which, of classy women of the world.
This is the part of the podcast where we are going to talk about badass women from history. Mm-hmm. And because we both don't want too much homework to do, we're going to take it in turns every podcast.
Yeah.
Hannah's kindly volunteered herself for week one.
I'm also super excited about this person.
Oh my God. I'm excited because I can see that you're excited.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So, for this episode, my badass woman from history is, let's take that back. So, originally, I was going to do a little summit related to this, and you can tell me what you think it is.
I'm dancing. You can't see this, but I'm dancing.
Any guesses?
Guesses, Hannah? Come on.
obviously Doctor Who with our beautiful new trans female doctor. But I don't even know, she's kind of outside the realms of gender anyway, but
I don't think Time Lords is she a Time Lady now?
Oh, I don't know.
Shit,
they
son.
Have not brought that up yet.
Oh, I can't wait for the episode where they do. I feel like they will.
Do you know what? I think keep Time Lord.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah. Why not?
Also, side note, Mallory Blackman wrote the latest episode. I haven't seen it yet.
Who's this person?
Mallory Blackman wrote Noughts and Crosses, and she's done some other, like, sort of teenish fiction.
Okay.
Really good writer. Did not realise she did the latest episode of Doctor Who. That's well cool. It's the one about Rosa Parks, but I haven't seen it yet.
Oh no, I've seen that. I've seen that episode. Yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be really good.
It's good. The whole season's great so far.
Mallory Blackman.
I'm also, for anyone that knows me, a huge Doctor Who fan.
I've not watched it since the first Matt Smith season.
Well, not loyal.
I know. I'm going to get back into it because Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Jodie Whittaker, she's so brilliant. Yeah, huge fan. I watch every episode. Christmas time comes around. Like, I'm like, I don't care what is happening. That it's supposed to be nice, happy
Stop
Christmas
giving me presents,
time.
Mom. I'm busy.
I will go and watch Doctor Who by myself. It needs to be.
Aww.
Anywho.
Yeah,
sorry, so, when I first discovered that the Doctor Who theme tune originally was composed by a woman called Delia Derbyshire, I became a huge fan of her. She is known as an electronic pioneer. Not just a female electronic pioneer.
Yeah.
She is like one of the first people to really establish it. And she was also a studio manager at the BBC, creating effects for TV and radio, and that's how she became known.
Mm-hmm.
However, as I researched further into the background of Delia Derbyshire and her work at the BBC, I realised that it absolutely couldn't have been possible without a woman who came before her. Someone who I'd never heard of, called Daphne Oram.
I love that you've done the this is a brilliant person, but there's another brilliant person behind it.
Yeah,
that's
the woman
brilliant.
Behind the woman. It's absolutely
yes.
how it is. So, I'm going to show you a picture of Daphne Oram. So, I believe this is in the 50s, and she looks like your typical 50s woman, but then surrounded by all this electronic equipment.
I'm so excited.
And she just knows. She knows she's sick. Look at her!
Okay, I'll put this on the Instagram because you need to see this. This is the most determined facial expression I've ever seen in my life. I love this woman already.
It's like such a stern look.
Yeah.
A little bit of smile, but not too much. Don't want to give too much away.
Oh, that waist. Inappropriate.
Yeah. Let's not look at her waist. Let's look at her work.
Yeah,
we're
no, but you're going to tell me about that now, so.
I am. So, we'll take it right back. So, Daphne was born to parents James and Ida Oram on the 31st of December 1925 in Wiltshire, in England, for any of our extra listeners who
extra?
We may...
Extra? Is yeah. that the new word for international? Extraterrestrial.
Extra-tanational.
Yeah, that's the
there
thing.
There we go. International listeners. Stars, everyone. She was educated at Sherborne School for Girls. And from
that's posh, that.
It sounds posh.
It is posh.
And from an early age, she was taught piano and organ, as well as musical composition. In 1942, so how old is she by then? Like, 20...
When did you say she was born?
1925.
I say that like I'm good at maths, I'm not good at maths. Late 20s?
Yeah, she was in her 20s.
She was under 100.
Guys, we never did maths. Oram was, so in 1942, Oram was offered a place at the Royal College of Music, but instead of accepting, she took a position as a junior studio engineer and music balancer at the BBC.
What's a music balancer?
I have no idea. It sounds magical.
It does.
During this time, she became interested in synthetic sound and began experimenting with tape recorders. And what she'd do is that after work hours, she would go around to all the other studios, collect everyone's tape recorders, experiment with them until the early hours. And
Wait, so
go on.
Like other people's tape recordings?
No, no, other people's tape recorders. So she could just record.
Collect loads and record loads of different shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because prior to, like, modern day production, what you had to do was record on, like, multiple tapes and, like, physically layer them.
Oh my god.
Which was a feat in itself to get to that stage. So she, so she would stay after work, go around the other studios, the other workrooms, collect up tape recorders, experiment with them, and then put them all back before anyone came to work the next day.
I love it.
She would typically record sounds on tape, then cut, splice, loop, slow them down, speed them up, play them backwards. So she was really, like, you know,
this is a go-getter woman.
Yeah, people weren't doing this.
She was creative as fuck.
Yes. This was not in her, this was in her own time as well. While she was at the BBC, she also composed original music, such as an orchestral piece called Still Point.
Oh.
This is considered the first composition that combined acoustic orchestration and live electronic manipulation.
First ever?
Yes, it's considered
okay
the first ever. However, it was rejected by the BBC.
BBC.
And it remained unheard for 70 years.
Shut up. Have you heard it?
No, I haven't heard it.
You should listen to it.
So you know,
disturbing?
When you went to an old-fashioned carnival and they would have a merry-go-round with this, like, strange sort of electronic, like, but still kind of pretty, like, sound going on.
I'm imagining horror films, but please correct
me. We could go there. Yeah, so it was very much like that. It was very, think about the time she was making this. This was in the 40s.
Mm.
So it's very much music of the time, but with electronic, which was at the time comparatively quite simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that great to listen to.
No, yeah.
By modern, like, with our modern ears.
No, but you can still appreciate.
Oh, you can still appreciate all the work.
The innovation.
For sure, for sure. So, Still Point, her composition, remained unheard for 70 years. And on the 24th of June 2016, the London Contemporary Orchestra performed it for the first time.
Was she alive?
You're asking me so many questions I don't have the answers to!
I'm just wondering if it's what kind of situation we're talking? Because
she was alive. She was not. Oh. She died in 2003.
Oh.
I saw 2000. I was like, and I was like, wait till you get to the end of the big number.
Yeah. I wonder if she left it to someone in her will, and then
I think it was property of the BBC.
Okay.
So
I was imagining her grandkids fighting over it.
Yeah, maybe. although. I don't know if she had children.
Yeah, no, that was a big assumption.
That was a big assumption.
Sorry, I've forgotten it.
Not all women are mothers, you know?
I'm not.
Me neither. So after this world debut, world debut in 2016, there was a revised version of Still Point performed at the Proms in London on the 23rd of July 2018.
Oh, that's this year. I've heard of that one.
Yeah, me too. Again, by the London Contemporary Orchestra.
Okay.
So it's taken a hell of a long time, but she has been rediscovered, and within certain circles, especially ones that appreciate orchestras and composition, that she has been celebrated.
That's so exciting.
It is exciting.
I'm so happy for her.
Yeah, me too.
I wonder if she knew when she was alive.
Think about...
Do you think she knew what she was doing was...
Absolutely.
It was brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
She strikes me as a very confident woman.
Yeah.
And as we're going to get further into it, I think even though Still Point was a now well-credited composition, was not the only thing she was doing for life.
Ooh, she's going to drop a truth bomb.
So, let's go into the 50s. And she was promoted to become a studio manager at the BBC. However, this is a good thing. So she went to Paris to visit some studios and to begin a campaign for the BBC to provide electronic music facilities for composing sounds and music. And this was focused on the Parisian music concrets techniques.
I know it well.
Yes, me too. So she'd been to Paris, inspired by the work they're doing there. It's much more of an experimental scene. And in 1957, she was commissioned to compose music for a play called Amphitron. One of my eyes are closed to try and read this word. Oh, I can't.
Oh my god, this is it's my right favorite at the top.
I know.
Amphitryon?
Amphitryon 38.
Amphitryon.
I'm sure we'll put this somewhere.
Amphitryon
38. Probably could have done with another play name if they were trying to sell tickets.
I mean, if the audience were anything like us.
Hey friend, you want to come with me to this play? Yeah, sure, what's it called?
Amphitryon.
Yeah, sounds great, let's go.
Yeah.
Anyway, she created this piece using a sine wave oscillator, a tape recorder, and some self-designed filters, thereby producing the first wholly electronic score in BBC history.
What?
I know. The first one in BBC history.
You know it is the first one because the BBC logged things better, I would say. That's so exciting.
It is, isn't it?
The first in BBC history.
In 1957, she was making entirely electronic musical compositions.
Mm. You don't think of I didn't even know electricity was a thing then. No, I didn't.
Funny.
I'm young.
So you can imagine this caught everyone's attention. You might go and see that play you can't pronounce if you thought it's all electronic music out of curiosity.
Mm.
And as demand grew for these electronic sounds, the BBC gave Oram and her co-worker, Desmond Briscoe.
Can we just pause on that?
Desmond Briscoe.
Desmond Briscoe.
It's the most BBC name I've ever heard. Daphne Oram and Desmond Briscoe. Amazing names. Why do we not have names like this anymore?
Briscoe. That sounds like a type of gravy.
That's Bisto.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Briscoe. It's like the alternative brand.
Yeah. What? Like the Aldi version.
Hey, don't knock it.
I love Aldi, but that's what the Aldi version would be called.
Nina, let me get on with my story.
Sorry.
So as demand grew for these electronic sounds, the BBC gave Oram and Desmond Briscoe a budget to establish the BBC Radiophonic Workshop in early 1958. And she was the first studio manager. Again, a lot of firsts.
She's good at firsts.
Mm. In October 1958, Oram was sent by the BBC. She was already at the BBC.
Go to the BBC, like go to your room.
To a conference of international electronic music at the Brussels World Fair. And I'm gonna ask you to say this because it's French and you're very good at French. But this was
a test.
So starting from here, that was the name of the conference.
Journée internationale de musique expérimentale. Merci bien.
All right, back to the one who can't really speak French but tries. And you know, again, she's been drawn back to this kind of part of the world, Brussels and France.
Yeah.
And after hearing some work produced by her contemporaries and being unhappy at the BBC's music department's continued refusal to push electronic composition into the foreground, she decided to resign from the BBC less than 1 year after the radiophonic workshop had opened, hoping to develop her techniques further on her own.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my god, she doesn't give a shit.
They were probably like, hey, we've given you a workshop, we've given you funding, we're giving you everything you could possibly need. And she's like,
you're not giving me a platform.
It's not enough. Exactly.
Oh my god. Yeah. This woman, she must have had some money.
Yeah. And I bet she just I think she just was so unique for her time that if someone wanted electronic music, they didn't have that many people to go to.
Yeah.
So she was able to probably make a decent living from it.
I'm proud of her.
Something we'll get into that a little further down. So immediately after leaving the BBC, which I believe was in 1959, Oram began setting up her Oramix studios.
As in?
Oramix.
As in her name.
So she had been developing this style of electronic music.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided that she was going to name it after herself.
Of course, because why wouldn't you?
So it's Oramix. Yes. Is her self-styled electronic music. So she created the studios for electronic composition in Tower Folly, which was a converted oast house at Fairseat. So this is where she first began experimenting with her drawn sound techniques. And this is where you draw onto 35mm film strip with shapes and designs that are etched into film strips and are read by photoelectric cells and transformed into sounds.
Okay, pause.
I know.
Say that again. Wait, what?
So, okay, I'll show you a picture, mm-hmm. which will help explain what she was doing. So she was literally getting 35mm film strips.
Okay.
Drawing onto them, and she had created a device that read the squiggles and lines and turned it into electronic music.
What? Wait, was she just doing squiggles? Was there...
She was doing squiggles. Squiggles and dots and lines.
Yeah, yeah. Did she know what kind of sounds they were going to make?
I don't believe so.
No, so it was
I believe she would put it through...
And then be like, cool.
That sounds sick. Yeah. I'll keep that. That sounds terrible. Let's change it. Let's see what else we can create.
It's like those machines that do beeps in the hospital. And do you know what I mean? Where like the
heart rate monitors.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good visual. So it you can imagine on the film strips, perhaps something like a heart rate.
It's like watching a heart rate monitor in reverse, going back into the machine.
Yeah, it's going back into the machine. Where, you know, those lines and squiggles are being read by photoelectric cells.
Of course, my favourite kind of cell.
So here's Oram's take on it. I've got a quote for you. Every nuance, every subtlety of phrasing, every tone gradation or pitch inflection must be possible just by a change in the written form.
I don't understand how she knew that this was a thing that you could do.
I have no idea.
She must have just... Do you reckon one time she was on the phone and she was looking for like something to write on, and the only thing she could grab was a little bit of film, and she was like scribbling a phone number, and then she was like, oh, I'll put it back through the machine. And then it made some really cool music.
I honestly have no idea how she arrived at this idea of writing on tape.
Yeah.
It's honestly extraordinary. And you know what? It's an experimentation that has not been fully realised to this day.
Really?
This is in essence an abandoned technology.
Why is no one doing it?
Probably because they're like, we need Daphne back. we're trying to develop a way to get people back from the past or raise them from the dead. So Daphne can explain to us.
We'll do that first. Yeah,
yeah. That's more achievable.
We'll work on the like life revival. What do you call it?
I think it has been developed, but it's just not something that's been fully realised and is used.
It's crazy.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. So to be able to work on Oramix and bring her vision to life, she continued to do commercial compositions, radio and television, theatre. And sound installations and exhibitions, because obviously this was not going to make her money. This was her passion project.
Girl's got to wait.
Yeah. But she was still able to make a real living from making electronic sounds out there in the real world.
Lift music.
Yeah.
That's rude.
I mean, that's jazz, but typically.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I want a bit of Doctor Who sound. Oh, I know it's Steely Derbyshire.
Imagine.
Being in a TARDIS.
Oh, so
good. Such nerds.
I'm so excited about that idea. If I ever own a building with a lift, I'm making sure that that's in it.
You're going to own a building with a lift? That's ambition. That's
my only ambition in life. Owning a lift.
I'm going to stay friends with you just so I can come over and use a lift.
I'm just going to own the lift, not the building.
I see.
Just the lift in a building. Yeah.
Mm. So... She'd left the BBC in 1959, And now we're taking it to February 1962. She's been working in her own studios, doing all of these different projects. Then she was awarded a grant of £3,550, which is the equivalent to £70,000 right now.
Shit, son. I was going to say that's like half her tuition fees, but it's not.
Oh, we wish. Mm. Which was from the Gulbenkian Foundation to support the development of the Oramic system. So some people were very interested in what she was doing.
Yeah, they were.
And a second grant from the same foundation was granted in 1965, and that was for £1,000. And then I think she just carried on like this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she did her studios, she did her Oramics. It's going good.
I mean, having a type of music named after you,
mm-hmm.
you can ride on that for a bit.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, she named it after herself. She didn't wait for anyone.
I live for that. All I want in life is something that I can name after myself.
I know, when you're a teenager and all you do is wait for that really musical boy in your class to write one of his crap songs and name after you.
Did that happen to you?
No.
I didn't, that wasn't... I'm sorry. I was busy pretending to like Enter Shikari for my first boyfriend.
I was busy.
Actually, in fairness, he was in a band, and I always used to hope that he'd dedicate songs to me.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Okay, whenever you date a boy in a band, mm. you're like, you need to name a song after me now.
Yeah.
But what we should do instead is go get in a band ourselves, write that song, and name it after ourselves in a massive egomaniac twist.
I'll be in a band. I'll name the band Nina. The first song will be called Nina. On the debut album, Nina.
Written by Nina, performed by Nina, produced by Nina, all instruments by Nina.
Nina lost all her friends.
That'll be the closing number.
Anyway, she didn't do that.
No, she just named an entire form of electronic music after herself.
And in fairness, her surname worked for it.
It did, Oramics, it's cool.
Yeah.
So in the 1980s, Oram worked on the development of a software version of Oramics for the Acorn Archimedes computer using grant money received from Ralph Vaughan Williams Trust. She wished to continue her, and I quote, mystical Oramics research.
Sorry, was there some hallucinogenics involved?
I mean, it might help understand.
Yeah, some things are starting to come together now, but yeah, go on.
Mystical Oramics research, but a lack of funding prevented the project from being fully realised.
Oh.
I mean, in the 80s, she was helping to develop musical software, composition software. Like, this is the reason why she is called a pioneer of electronic music. And I'm going to say a pioneer of music in general.
Oh, yeah. You can't isolate the genre if it's not.
And more excitingly, obviously, we've talked about Delia Derbyshire.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was a studio manager at the radiophonic studio at the BBC. She wouldn't have been able to go there if it wasn't for Daphne Oram. And other women that followed in her steps were Jenith Worsley, Maddalena Fagandini.
Careful.
Italian name, Fagandini. Yep. And Elizabeth Parker. And as we've already discussed, she died in 2003. But what a life.
She did some shit.
Yeah.
What I really enjoy about that is, I don't know how much information there is about her personal life on the internet, but it's so refreshing to hear about someone's career and not have it constantly like, but then she had to go back and look after her children and she was married to this man and he was brilliant. But do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a woman that was fucking doing shit on her own.
She's not down in the history books as the wife of someone.
Exactly.
The mother of someone.
Mm.
The secretary of someone.
Yeah.
She's the one in charge of this whole thing. And even when the BBC rejected her and the British audience were not ready for her, she still went ahead and made it happen.
She knew that she still had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was appreciated.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a sick girl.
And, you know, as we discussed, you know, the proms and the London Orchestra have gone back and revisited her work and celebrated it. Excitingly, 40 years after she made her Ulramic machine. You know, the machine with all the squirrels and the lions.
Yeah. I want one of them.
I know.
Christmas list.
I mean, literally, I can already imagine apps being like that. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Maybe that exists. All apps exist.
I don't know, there's an app for literally everything. Yeah.
So 70 years after she designed a, it's called Mini Ulramics, so it's like a more portable version of her giant machine.
Mm-hmm.
She designed it, but a prototype was never made. And 40 years later, a PhD student called Tom Richards researched her lost design and built a prototype.
Yes, Tom.
So people can now hear the results of her work. That was designed. So it seems that seems to happen a lot with Daphne. Like, she creates these things.
I like that you're on first name terms.
Me and Daphne.
Me and Daph.
We go down the pub, we take some hallucinogenics, and then we go write scribbles on some tape. I don't know why I've got to go. Yeah, anywho.
That's the true story here.
I'm going to show Nina a picture now, is the portable Ulramics machine. It looks like great fun.
Do you know what it looks like? I'm just ruining everything you showed me a picture of. It looks like the pattern of the chairs on the back of the school bus. You know, like the old school bus that you used to get to the swimming baths?
Yes, like coaches and buses of a certain era.
Like those...
I think that might be Tom Richards, not Daphne.
Tom Richards, get your squiggles together.
Anyway, thank you, Tom Richards, for your contribution.
Even if it does look like...
Even if it does, like, some...
A Scots coach.
A Scots coach. Hey, it was Goodwin for me.
Yeah.
I can't make that northern. Goodwin?
That is not northern.
It is.
Goodwin.
Mr. Goodwin and his coaches. just lower.
Goodwin.
Anyway, yeah, that is my story of Daphne Oram.
That is
the
very
pioneer
good.
Of electronic music.
You've set the bar high. That was well researched and well delivered.
Thanks.
I'm impressed and I've learned something.
And also, side note, because a lot of people know me through music,
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to get this out. Like, I need to do some musical to start with. Yeah. And I look forward to teaching myself about women from other industries.
That's so exciting.
It is exciting.
I just love the idea that there's all these people that have been doing amazing things mm-hmm. and we don't know about them because they're women and we're going to find them.
We're going to find them.
We can't hide from us. Oh my god.
Why do I... Oh.
You make everything so murdery. I'm going to use... I'm fully going to go and use some old libraries and shit. Like, I'm ready to research.
I mean, I'm probably going to use the internet.
Yeah, that too.
Because I'm a child of my time.
Yeah.
But
there might be some... I don't know. I just like the idea of opening a book that no one's opened before. Finding the story of a woman.
I don't know.
I think I'm romanticising things a bit.
I look forward to your romanticised story.
Mine's going to be a heck of something, isn't it?
I can't wait just to sit back and listen and drink my wine.
Yeah, no, that's nice.
I've got a full glass right here just waiting for me.
I'm a whole glass ahead, so. Yeah, no, that was... Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So, this will be the point in future where we need your help. So, the structure of the podcast each fortnight,
mm-hmm.
is going to be us chatting about current affairs like we've done, one of us telling a story about a badass woman from history, and then where we need you is we want your stories from women in your life, not necessarily in your life, any woman that has been inspirational to you that you should tell us the story about, the story of.
Yeah, I think any woman that has inspired you, she might be someone you know, she might be a friend, a teacher,
mm.
a relative. She might also be someone you don't know, you know, someone from history, like we talk about, or an artist, or a scientist.
Someone
or
in your local area. Someone...
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, sometimes you meet those people that you think, oh, you deserve credit. Mm-hmm. You don't, like, you're appreciated, but you don't get the credit you deserve, and what you do is amazing. We want to hear about those women.
Yeah, and how they've inspired you mm. in what you're doing, or, you know, what the reasons why you look up to them.
Yeah.
So, if you do have one of these stories about an inspirational woman, please do email us at thatswhatshesaidlisteners@gmail.com. We'll be sure to post it on our social medias, so you'll be able to find it there too.
Yeah, we'd love to hear not only your stories, but anything you have to say about what we've discussed. We just want to hear about great women, and if you're a great woman, or otherwise.
Sounds like she's putting out an ad for a date. If you're a great woman in my area, single woman, race mingle.
No, that's episode two. My story for next week, is the week after next, is actually going to be just, I'm a great woman, and these are the reasons you should date me.
I look forward to it. And Nina, do you know any of our social media handles or addresses where people can find us?
We'd love to hear what you have to say. You can find us on Facebook at That's What She Said Podcast, or on Instagram, That's What She Said_podcast. We also have personal Twitter accounts that you can follow, because we're both really funny. You can find me at @AttridgeNina.
And you can find me at @HET_music.
Okay. I think we've actually done our first ever podcast episode. Uh-huh. How do you feel?
I feel good. I look forward to, you know, sharing the wonderful images from my story and as well our fabulous artwork. I cannot wait.
She makes us look so cool.
I know. Thank you, Cami.
You got the photo. Okay, we did it.
All right.
Thank you so much if you've made it this far. We'll be back in a fortnight.
Yeah, so we'll be a fortnightly podcast, and we look forward to, you know, look out on the socials when we post the next one.
We'll keep you posted. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.